key to making this whole thing happen. So thanks for spending this hour with me. We'll see you tomorrow. Be good. Be green. Take care.
I can't compete and be with the writers in there. You can rough it up.
Rough it up.
Hey, if you like it, you can slide it up. Come on, slide it up now. Grown man,
right?
Don't make a grown man,
right?
Don't make a grown man, right?
My eyes dilate, my lips go green, my hands are greasy. She's a mean machine.
This is the Quality News Network. In an interview embargoed until after his death, former President Gerald Ford said President Bush and his top advisors made a big mistake by invading Iraq. Ford told journalist Bob Woodward that he would not have gone to war based on what was known publicly at the time. Ford died Tuesday at his home in California. He was 93. Ceremonies begin tomorrow for the former president at a Palm Desert church, followed by a flight to Washington, D.C. on Saturday, where he will lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda. A funeral service at the National Cathedral is planned for next Tuesday, after which his casket will be flown to his hometown of Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he will be buried next to his presidential museum. President Bush says he's making good progress in coming up with a fresh strategy on Iraq and plans to seek more advice before announcing a revised plan in January. Bush gathered with his top advisors today at his Texas ranch. Former North Carolina Democratic Senator and 2004 Vice Presidential candidate John Edwards today formally announced he will run for president in 2008. He made the announcement in an area of New Orleans hardest hit by Hurricane Katrina. Edwards says his campaign will focus on eliminating poverty in the U.S., among other issues. Airlines are canceling flights and snowplows are in the streets of Denver today as another major storm blows toward the city. 2 feet of snow still remains on the ground from last week's paralyzing blizzard, and around 18 inches of snow are forecast for the area starting today. New York, Oakland, Chicago, and other major U.S. cities are reporting a significant increase in homicides after years of decline. Police attribute the rise to the influence of gangs combined with increased accessibility to drugs and guns. The Justice Department reports, however, that the rate of domestic violence dropped sharply between 1993 and 2004. The decrease is attributed to increased law enforcement training and awareness. In world news, today is the first day of the annual Hajj pilgrimage in Mecca, Saudi Arabia. Nearly 3 million Muslims from around the world are participating this year in the series of rituals to cleanse themselves from sin. Saddam Hussein's chief lawyer implored world leaders today to prevent the United States from handing over the ousted leader to Iraqi authorities for execution, saying Hussein should have protection from his enemies as a prisoner of war. In Mogadishu today, Islamic forces abandoned the capital as Somali troops entered. More than 140 Somalis and Ethiopians are missing in the water off the coast of Yemen. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business Next.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of The Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At The Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Today, the Food and Drug Administration declared that meat and milk from cloned animals are safe to eat. The federal government agency declared cloned livestock as virtually indistinguishable from regular livestock and thus probably not subject to any special labeling, although that decision is still pending. The Financial Times is reporting that Apple Computer CEO Steve Jobs received $7.5 million in stock options 5 years ago without the authorization required from the company's board of directors. The Securities and Exchange Commission is deciding whether to go after individuals and or the company in the matter. Apple's iTunes online music store has been overwhelmed in recent days as masses of people with new iPods and iTunes gift cards tried to download songs. Reports of frequent error messages and slowdowns of 20 minutes or more to download music have flooded the company. Several U.S. airlines have launched ticket price cuts. United began the post-holiday fare reductions and was quickly followed by American, Delta, Northwest, and Continental. Edmunds.com reports that the best-selling car of 2006 was the Toyota Camry, while the best-selling truck of the year was the Ford F-Series pickup. The most fuel-efficient car of 2006 was the Toyota Prius. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.53 a barrel, up 19 cents a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 9 points at 12,501. The Nasdaq was down 6 points at 2425. And the S&P 500 was down 2 points at 1424. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. As you well know, we've been away for a while. We took a little break after Christmas, or before and after Christmas. We knocked off Friday, and boy, that I'm not the only rusty one here. That was an abrupt little. Never mind, Agnes. Yeah, I know you're number one in my book too. No, we took off Friday, and then a bunch of bad things happened. Some of you know, some of you don't. My father is very, very ill. He is in hospital at this time. And long about midnight, 1 o'clock on Friday night, Saturday morning, we pretty nearly lost him. And things have been very touch and go ever since, and they're still not very good. Candor is candor. Things just get kind of rough when your heart only works at 15% of its capacity. But he's making progress and improving. And one of the ways that I know that my father is still among us and still with us is that, and I'm just going to do this, some people might think it's really trashy on my part, but it's okay. My father, hovering near death, watching the television in his hospital room in the intensive care unit, with me sitting by his side, saw the announcement of the death of Gerald Ford and looked up and said, "Son of a bitch. Pardon the other son of a bitch, when we should have sent him to prison." So that tells me that there's still a good fighting spirit there. But we are in the middle of our 4G. That's the Gerald Ford death orgy, the 4G. And it's, I can't help but reflect on what a load of unmitigated BS it is. I mean, I've seen some shameless posturing prostitutional crap in my life, But this business about Gerald Ford, well, let's start with the solicitations from the right-wingers that have hit my email box lately. Could you give me a hand there, Agnes? Let's see. This from one particular right-wing news site. You know, they're always hustling anthrax culters, screeds. I have a hard time calling them books. And Michelle Malkin. Apparently, if you're evil, nasty, and Republican, there is no one that this site won't hustle. And what's the headline of this story that I received in my email box? That's right. Name the USS Gerald R. Ford. Will America name its next aircraft carrier a super carrier that is planned to be the greatest naval ship ever built after former President Ford? Jesus, I hope not. I mean, what'll it do? Knock off its superstructure trying to pass underneath a bridge? Get stuck in the mud? Liberate Poland? You know, I understand the whole lesson from Bambi about you. Thumper, what did I say? If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. I understand that under ordinary circumstances, but when we are bombarded for days on end with nothing but filthy, unmitigated lies, is it somehow a violation of that admonishment that we don't speak ill of the dead to talk about the fact that they are lies? I mean, we're pretty stressed out here right now. My hair is clenched, okay? What little of it there is left. And I sit there to click, click. And historical opinion seems to have come around to Gerald Ford's way of thinking and understanding that the American people needed a healing and not a prosecution after the click. Gerald Ford showed obvious wisdom when the rest of the nation was opposed to him when he pardoned Richard... Click. The pardon of Richard Nixon has proven over time to be the healthiest choice that America's body politic... Click. It was wrong then... And it is wrong now. I believe it was Hunter S. Thompson who said that Richard Nixon's body should have been stuffed in a rusty old fuel drum and floated out to sea and sunken with concrete so it could never possibly wash up and touch American soil again. And you know what? Hunter S. Thompson was guilty of the use of perhaps what some may think is a little bit of hyperbole. But not a lot. Not a lot. Richard Nixon was evil. Richard Nixon would be judged evil in the annals of history if for nothing more than Salvador Allende in Chile. But Richard Nixon is one long filthy Ginsu commercial. But wait, there's more. There's the bombing of Cambodia, the secret war in Laos. And we haven't even gotten to Watergate yet. And this is the sleazy bucket of guts that Gerald Ford pardoned. We create a criminal justice system in this country that applies to princes and paupers alike. But Gerald Ford made sure that it did not apply to Richard... What did Harry Truman call him? Richard Pinhead Nixon.
Hey, he's name calling.
You know, maybe we need a little bit more name calling in American politics. Maybe there's been a lot of name calling going on all along. It's just that we Democrats, we liberals, we progressives have thought we were damned well above it all. And we were going to let the other side do all the name-calling. You know what? We've been called names for 30 years.
Liberals.
You know, they say it the way you'd say,
baby eaters. Liberals.
And we've sat back and said, no, we're not, Jesus.
They're calling us names again. It's mean.
There are lessons for us to learn from the Republicans and the right-wingers and the conservatives, and that is the lesson of never stopping punching. You know, we had them on the ropes with the November 7th election, and we haven't even taken power in the Congress yet.
We need bipartisanship.
Screw bipartisanship. And I better not catch the Democratic Congress. Yeah, because they're afraid of me. I better not catch the Democratic Congress naming any damned aircraft carriers after Gerald R. Ford. Or Leslie, whatever his name was, before his second father adopted him. Yeah, you did know that, right? His original name was Leslie. No aircraft carriers, thank you very kindly. No submarines, no fast attack cruisers, no destroyer escorts, no Aegis guided missile cruise, no garbage scows. Jesus, it's bad enough that we've got two of these super carriers named after, one after George H.W. Bush and the other one after Ronald Reagan. You know, I guess I don't know. Maybe the planes on the USS Ronald Reagan are only equipped with movie cameras. God knows the planes on the USS George H.W. Bush probably automatically eject the pilots while the rest of the crew goes down in flames, just like their namesake did. Are you up for that? Are you ready to watch the launching of the USS Gerald R. Ford? Oh, it was there in all its glory. Sign our petition. Name the next supercarrier the Gerald R. Ford. Yeah. Whatever happened to Wasp and Hornet? Whatever happened to Lexington and Yorktown and Essex? The single greatest class of carriers in the Second World War was the Essex class. And the namesake of that class was the fightingest ship in the fleet, but the United States Navy, the best they could do was to name a helicopter carrier after her when they built that. Essex, Wasp, Hornet. Those are ship names that are 200 and 300 years old that go back to the Royal Navy. I don't know. Maybe the next thing they'll do, maybe let's take Franklin Delano Roosevelt off the dime and put Gerald Ford on it. Remember when they did that with Ronald Reagan? You know, because these are Republicans, these are conservatives, these are, in other words, morons who didn't realize that the reason FDR is on the dime is because of his central role in supporting the March of Dimes, by which dime by dime by dime, thousands, nay, millions of people's lives have been made better. And this, like I said, you know, we've had a lot of stuff going on in our family, but in my quiet moments, I sit back here and I read stuff and I see, please help us name the next aircraft carrier, the Gerald R. Ford. I don't think so. You know, at some point in time, some bad luck is going to catch up with us for naming those wonderful ships, those brilliant pieces of military engineering. And I confess to a soft spot for the United States Navy. Dad manned a boiler in the depths and bowels below the waterline of the USS Essex. And Came close a couple of times to the Air Force of the Empire of Japan, making sure that I didn't happen. I've got an uncle who flew off the decks of various aircraft carriers and was a fighter ace in the Second World War, in an F-4F Wildcat and an F-6F Hellcat. Went on, flew jets. So yeah, naming those magnificent pieces of military engineering that should be used to defend this nation as opposed to participate in attacks on nations that had nothing to do with attacking us. All of that sets us up, doesn't it, for some pretty ugly blowback. And we've got enough bad karma on our hands, if you believe in that kind of thing. We've got enough bad karma on our hands without naming another one after another useless waste of a Republican president. Because let's get right down to it. If you're paying attention to any of the media, and God knows it's a chore, because it's like, I don't know, dare I say this, it's the same, well, no, that's a little too gross, but I have, watching what the media is doing over the death of Gerald Ford is, shall we say, sickening, disgusting, revolting. The business with Richard Nixon alone is bad enough, but then you forget that the slaughter in East Timor took place on Ford's watch and with Gerald Ford's go-ahead. Sure it did. What else? The pardon, the pardon, the pardon, the pardon, and yeah, that rotten old bastard Nixon should have been prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law and should have died in prison. And I maintain that kind of a sentiment about a president, Republican or Democrat, who violates the very foundation of our government the way that Richard Nixon did. And of course, it's going pretty much unstated but there's only one way to look at this. Everywhere we are now, every last bit of agony that this nation is enduring right now, be it Afghanistan or Iraq, we have Gerald Ford to thank for it. When the Nixon administration put its bow beneath the waves and stuck its stern up in the air and started, there's the naval analogy again, and started sliding under the seas, people like Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld could have had their political careers sucked in behind it. Except for a man named Gerald R. Ford. Gerald R. Ford revived the political fortunes and the political career of both Rumsfeld and Cheney, giving them prominent positions within his cabinet. What's more, under Gerald Ford, George H.W. Bush, inept little doofus of a climber that he was, went, I'm not sure what the order was. Was it Republican National Committee chair, then CIA director, and then ambassador to China? or some variation on that triad? George H.W. Bush's career was getting ready to slide beneath the waves, too. As well it should have. He was a complete oaf. I believe if you check Nixon's memoirs, even Nixon said something along those lines. But no, Gerald Ford, not only helped George H.W. Bush's career survive, he advanced it. 3,000 dead from Iraq and Afghanistan, and those names of those dead and all the tens of thousands wounded. Of course, this is with the 2020 hindsight of history. But all those names are names that attach to Gerald Ford. And lest you make the mistake of thinking that right-wing weirdoism is something new, in 1970, as a member of the House of Representatives, Gerald R. Ford led the charge to impeach Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas for publishing a scholarly legal article in what Ford termed a pornographic magazine called, I believe, the Evergreen Review. And it had some art nudes in it. Larry Flint we're not talking about here. About as dirty as looking at the Venus de Milo. Milo. Gerald R. Ford, because you see, William O. Douglas by that time was, he's a liberal Supreme Court justice. At this day and age, he would be referred to as an activist judge. And Ann Coulter might be out suggesting that someone put strychnine in his creme brulee like she did about Justice John Paul Stevens. Gerald R. Ford led the fight to impeach a man for publishing something that was in the same magazine as some pictures of some dirty naked women. Now, as a Southerner, it is my duty to remind you that there is a difference between N-A-K-E-D, naked, and N-E-K-K-I-D, naked. Naked is the act of having no clothing on. Naked is the act of having no clothing on and being up to something. So, you know, enough. Enough. For the love of God, enough with this 4G and the rehabilitation of one of the most bumbling doofuses who has ever occupied 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And this is the weird part. I remember I was the same age then that my son is now, and I was watching Gerald Ford bumble his way through the presidency. The same way that my son now watches W bumble his way through the presidency. And to the eyes of an 11-year-old, it's disturbing. It's that first little hint that maybe somebody's been feeding you a lot of chicken crap and calling it chicken salad with all those patriotic history classes in elementary school. That maybe some of it, if you knock on it, turns out to ring just a little bit hollow. And you sink the crowbar in, and you find something that's a lot less than what you've been led to believe. Oh, yeah, Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford, who liberated Poland in a debate, who said that the Soviet Union exerts no influence over Eastern Europe. Really? And yet I'm sitting here talking about this. You remember this, or you've read it in the histories. And you can't, for the life of you, find it being mentioned anywhere in the so-called professional media. The professional media of, say, people like NBC Nightly News anchor Brian Williams, who complained in an essay about Time making the person of the year, you or me or, you know, somebody that's face is in a Mylar on the magazine cover thingy. And he complained that America was losing its grip on important news because we're all at YouTube watching, and he said it, I didn't, at YouTube watching cat videos. Well, you know what? A cat video on YouTube is at least entertaining. There's nothing entertaining about watching this wholesale rewrite of history that is the death of Gerald Ford. Now, you can think I'm just a cruel SOB. But you know what? Let me just say this and get it out there. And I'm not deliberately trotting out our private worries, our private matters. No. But you know what? In a hospital bed, in an intensive care unit, here in West Virginia tonight, there lays a man, 11 years Gerald Ford's junior, who was 1,000 times the man that Gerald Ford ever was. And I say that with no reservations whatsoever. And so maybe my perspective is a little bit skewed on this. But watching people, my God, Richard Valeriani, who used to report, be an NBC News reporter, posted a blog essay today saying that, wait for it, saying that Chevy Chase took down the Ford presidency with his send-up of Ford and his pratfalls. Yeah, really, I'm not kidding. And I remember it, the one where Chevy climbed the ladder as Gerald Ford to decorate the Christmas tree, and the dog Liberty was a hollow plastic dog that cheap painted, just not real. Sit, Liberty, sit. I mean, that's how far the USS Gerald Ford and Richard Valeriani blaming Ford's loss to Carter on Chevy Chase. Jesus and his brother Harry. How long does this go on? How much are we expected to stomach before our, never mind our long national nightmare, our long national vomiting begins? Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Peter calling from Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob, I've got a headline for you.
Okay.
Gay community mourns Gerald Ford's death. Rolling of the four laps.
No. You made that up.
No, not at all. This started from the log closet Republican president, Patrick Salmon, and they're desperately trying to paint the entire gay community as we're all wearing our best eyeshadow and wearing our black veils and all in mourning. And the whole thing, he sent condolences to the family that says, he was a great man, led our country to the most difficult at times, blah, blah, blah. But what this comes down to is that in 2001, President Ford, ex-President Ford by then, he's 89 years old, he joined the advisory board of the Republican Unity Coalition. What a joke that is. Gay Straight Alliance was formed to advocate gay and lesbian issues in the Republican Party. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, so what? Yeah, this is the group that decorates the log closet?
Yeah, we all know how well all that went. And then also in 2001, you know, he says, he's quoted in the Detroit News as saying, I've always believed in inclusive policy and welcoming gays and blah, 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 in the Republican Party, et cetera, et cetera. This is nothing more than an 89-year-old man who is trying to make peace with his higher power after, you know, basically trotting on everybody's rights for years. And so they're trying to paint the log cabin Republicans mourning as being a universal gay thing. It's absolutely ridiculous. So when you hear the news that the gay community is mourning the death, it's more like we're having afternoon tea dances.
Well, you know, somewhere out there in America, there's a drag queen playing disco music at 16 instead of 33 and a third.
I think I know what she's playing, but I ain't going there. And I got another one for you.
Okay.
Got another one for you. This is from the scientific realm, and it's got to do Komodo dragons. Who knew? Virgin births. I'm serious, it's a heart attack. Now, virgin births, you know, have been documented in other, like, little teeny tiny, you know,
seahorses.
Yeah, little tiny things. Okay, well, everybody's in total shock now that the, you know, the world's largest lizards that have virgin births. These two lizards are female lizards, and one had never had contact with a male lizard, and the other one hadn't mated in 2.5 years, and they laid fertilized eggs. And the process is known as a very scientific article, parthenogenesis, I think it's pronounced.
Yeah, parthenogenesis.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And,
that's what I'm here for.
Came as a complete surprise. Nobody expected it. And the lizards, when they do this, they always lay male eggs so that theoretically when the little male grows up, it can mate with its mom and, you know.
Is this where we start playing the banjos?
No, but, I mean, this is either scientific proof of the virgin birth or it's proof that Mary was a manger lizard.
Oh, God. Yeah, and you know what? We got, I don't know, the three wise lizards coming from the east. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have seen his tail in the east.
You know, I don't really make all that, the light of the virgin birth and all that, but it just, you know, what really galls me when I read this article, what stirred me up, was the fact of how the church discounts science at every possibility. And the problem is, you know, really, can religion stand up to progress in science? That's what it amounts to.
Well, see, the problem here, Peter, is that, you know, from the religious end of things, why, you know, I would expect to be the church out there, the church to be out there pointing at the Komodo dragon going, see?
See? Yeah, that's what I first read, and I thought to myself, well, see?
A lizard can do it?
Right. But, you know,
a 16-year-old Palestinian girl can, too.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, after all, the Israelis look on 16-year-old Palestinian girls as roughly the human equivalent of a lizard.
Exactly. That's so funny and so true. And, you know, I'm so glad that you're back in the saddle again, dude. I have missed you. I've gone through a certain amount of withdrawal and gnawed on some furniture, but, you know, I'm
got a real nice little tiki thing now.
Yeah.
used to be the end table leg.
Yeah. And I'm so sorry about the situation, the family situation, and
well, it's stressful. I mean,
oh,
it,
God, it must be.
And you know, we're contemplating things, and again, like I said, I'm the privacy schmivacy. I mean, If things go from bad to worse, then we will pack up. We will head to Alabama to put him to rest where he wishes to be put. And, you know, I've sat there and had conversations with him about all of this.
Yeah, well, end of life, you know, it's a real fact for everybody, and it has to be discussed.
Well, I walked and see, you know, this is he is apparently getting some better, although, like I said, it's kind of incremental, you know, when you got 15% heart function. But I walked in there. I guess it was Sunday morning, and he looks at me and says, how you doing, Dad? And he says, well, I'm dying. And I looked at him and said, yeah, it's kind of tough to hear. He said, well, 43 years now, and I never BS'd you before. I'm not going to start. So, you know, I got to honor that. But yeah, it's been stressful. And somehow or another, though, I said before any of this happened that we would be back tonight.
Oh yeah,
because we just take a little holiday break. But I've had about all the holiday break I can stand, Peter.
Yeah, give me stress. Give me something.
Somebody get the chains and the oars out and get me back in the hull, in the bottom of the galley rowing.
I understand completely. Well, you are a breath of fresh air on a Thursday night, and we're glad to have you back.
Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate it, and we have our fun with the Komodo dragons. I ran across one story about it where one of the scientists was quick to point out that they would not name any of the dragons Jesus.
Really? I didn't see that one. I saw that. The scientific analysis, I had to add the evil twist to myself.
but I'm sitting there going, why not? There are people named Jesus all over Mexico. Well, okay, Jesus.
Yeah.
But, but you're right about where the church is with science.
Yeah, it really ticks me off. And where would they be without it? I mean, every church has got air conditioning and sound systems.
Oh, no kidding. And those little tiny head-worn Countryman brand microphones
got one.
Yeah, you can't see it without a magnifying glass. No, they are not visible to the naked eye.
And the little choir mics that dangle from the ceiling. Not to mention the tapes available at the end of the service, and the videos, and
Yeah.
Right.
You got that?
Yeah. Where would they be?
Well, but those are all electronics that operate on miraculous principles, Peter.
I see. Yeah, can't be explained.
There are those who would say that, we operate here on the same. God only knows why this works, but we fire it up every evening, and it goes, and we're grateful.
Somehow, the packets get to where they're supposed to go.
And sometimes they don't.
Yep, sometimes they don't. That's always a cause of concern, too.
Sometimes the packets don't go right, and I wind up sounding like a Johnny Mathis song. Well, good evening, out for you. So we do what we can.
Yep, we do what we can. We do the best.
Wow, we've worked in Lizards, the Virgin Mary, and Johnny Mathis.
Yeah, that's right.
We're set. The rest of the show is just gravy after that.
Okay. I'll see you guys later.
All right, take it easy.
Good night.
Bye now. What was the virgin lizard's name? For she knew not another lizard. And, I made it all the way through that discussion without once mentioning Mary Cheney, because, after all, her father is a lizard. Oh, stop it. There's somebody over at Democratic Underground, I think, goes by the name of Swamp Rat, that does some great illustrations of various and sundry right-wing and Bush administration people, and they're all green and lizardy-looking. I haven't been by there in a while. Swamp Rat must have had a darn good time with the lizard story.
Remember V?
Yeah, V. Remember V?
Where'd they
come from? Let's go to the phone. Sarge is with us from southern Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
Yeah, it's good to hear your dad's doing better. That's really wonderful.
Thank you.
You kind of left out some of the major accomplishments of Mr. Ford.
Well, I had to leave something for the callers.
Well, you left out the Warren Commission doctrine that he didn't...
The single bullet theory.
Did. That was really nice of him. He fixed it up so we had a magic bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Thank Gerald Ford for that. And then... wasn't he kind of involved in some covering up of the My Lai massacre or something?
Well, I think there was some mention of that, yes. Now you mention it.
Real good man, Heck, we ought to name a ship. What, Titanic? You want to change the name of it?
Well, I'm thinking, no aircraft carriers. At best, a garbage cow.
Let's just go ahead and put it on a Titanic. that ship didn't work too good.
Well, and they're burying him in Michigan. He ought to be buried on the other side of Richard Nixon from Pat. I know this sounds mean, but I mean, can we not at least be a little bit, just try to be a tiny little bit, Sarge, historically accurate?
Well, the truth is, the man doesn't deserve accolades that he didn't accumulate. He just that's like saying Well, let's just praise George W. Bush for the wonderful job he's done on Katrina recovery on the Mississippi coast. Let's rename Pascagoula
Bush World.
I mean, Jesus Christ, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but that's the way these people do. They just don't want to accept history for what it is. They want to change it. And I'm sure not a one of them would have been saying, well, let's praise Jimmy Carter. You know, where he...
Well, now bear in mind, when Jimmy Carter, that good, good, good man, the greatest of any living ex-president in memory, and even, you know... Has there been an ex-president do more with his life than Jimmy Carter has in the entire history of this nation?
If he has, I don't know who it was, because Jimmy Carter, he has just lived his faith all the way, and you know, he don't talk the talk, he walks the walk.
And when the day comes that he breathes out and does not breathe in again, he will be sleazed by the media.
Yeah. Yeah, he will be.
And they will talk.
I can hear Limbaugh now. Well, it's a good thing that old sucker's gone. You know,
yeah.
They make me sick. They really make me sick. My dog could do more for this country than those people have, and I don't know why they want to make heroes out of.
I kind of do, Sarge. I kind of do know, or I think I know. It's about perpetuating the myth of the Republican as you know, the upstanding lover of America, while Democrats are, you know, bottom feeding pond scum who hate America first.
Yeah, yeah, like Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Yeah.
Right. Or John Kennedy.
Yeah, John Kennedy. But I tell you what, he wasn't the greatest, but he wasn't a bad president. That was Clinton.
No.
I mean, Clinton wasn't a bad
president. And when that day comes, it will be wall to wall. You know, they will trot Monica out of wherever she is. I was listening to some radio show the other day. It was Elaine Boozler and Meryl Marco filling in for Stephanie Miller, and they pointed out that she just graduated with a master's degree in economics from the London School of Economics. They will trot her out from somewhere and put her on display. To you know, in order to make sure that everybody remembers that Bill Clinton was just a womanizing so-and-so who never, and there won't be mention of the fact that it was the largest peacetime expansion of the American economy in American history. No, it'll be all Monica all the time.
Well, you know, Lottie just put something on the chat that's kind of interesting. You know, the guy that saved Ford the second time around, second assassination attempt, was gay.
I'll be darned.
I didn't know that. Lottie just mentioned it a little while back in the chat, and I thought that was pretty good stuff. Listen, I'm gonna let you tell the story about what's going on with our effort, Novim, Horn.
Well, yeah, and it's a brilliant idea, and it was your idea in the first place, Sarge.
Let me give credit where credit's due. The idea came from Sean.
Ryan.
He mentioned it to me, and I said, let's go with it. In fact, why don't we make it a trio and get Head on Radio? And he said, oh, gee, that's great. I'd love that. So I think, well, you know, it's like I was saying earlier, it's the beauty of our people is that we know how to work together. Well, I mean, we can disagree, but we know how to work together. And we're not trying to perpetuate some agenda. We're working on.
Well, what was the news story that was out a couple of days ago? It was I saw it, and I wished I was actually coming back on the air that evening. The government has already identified $2 billion in money just thrown down a rat hole in Katrina recovery. Money that never even got to where it was supposed to be. Money that never did what it was supposed to do. Recovery efforts that.
Crooks and Liars. So you can read or see it at Crooks and Liars.
Yeah, $2 billion.
Yeah. Oh, that's chump change for these people. That there's so much more that's going on. I talked to your senator office today, Senator Byrd.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he's really going to check into all of this. So I called him up and told him, hey, I'm going to talk to you. You know,
yeah.
Come come let me know. And I said, in fact, you can hear me on Head On Radio Network if you turn it on. And the woman says, well, I've never heard that. And I said, well, it's right there in West Virginia, ma'am. She said, what's the guy's name? I said, Bob Kincaid. She says, okay, well, we'll start paying attention. So maybe you'll have an input with Senator Byrd before long.
Well, maybe, Sarge. And I'll try to bear that in mind, because now that the Alito hearings are a little over a year past, it might be safe for me to think about talking about them again, talking to them again.
Well, you know,
it was a bad time, Sarge.
Lot still don't talk to me, buddy.
it's not that he doesn't talk to you; it's you're not talking to him.
Well, I'll talk to him, but he just doesn't like the way I talk. You know, why did you think the troops can be killed and the people kill them? Granted, amnesty, you know.
Yeah. Well, now his house has been rebuilt, and he's sitting there on the front porch drinking mint juleps through a straw, and, you know, what Katrina recovery? Everything's all right, isn't it?
Well, you know, that's the thing about it. He's having to sue his insurance company.
Yeah.
So it ain't going too good for him either.
But it's going a lot better for him than it is for lots of other folks.
Well, see, he has several houses, so he's not, you know, it's not like it's just an
insurance. Yeah, the roof didn't get blown off all of them.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, and the thing is, he ran on the platform this time that he felt like he better stay in there so he could help Mississippi recover. And one of the ways he's helped is he's made it to where they can do more offshore drilling, like on the barrier islands, which will just worsen the hurricane effects.
Sure.
I mean, good gracious, you know.
Well, the
do me a favor, don't help me anymore, please.
Yeah.
But I just, you know. And people are buying it. You know, people are friggin' buying it. It's just, it's unbelievable. But that's Mississippi for you. But I'm gonna let you tell people about all of that. And I'm so glad that Dr. Bill had that idea. I'm gonna contact Lowe's and see if maybe they'll donate some stuff to Jim. But that was a good idea that Dr. Bill had there.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this. I've seen a lot of action on it. There's been, I think, I'm not sure, I may be wrong, so don't hold me to this, but I believe we've raised around $5,000 already.
Merciful sakes.
I mean, I might be wrong, but we've raised at least three. But I think it's more along the lines of five. But, we're doing some good, and Jim is just tickled to death.
I'm so glad.
We just don't need to stop. I'm going to let you go, Bob.
All right. Sarge, you
again,
take care.
My best wishes to your dad, man.
Thank you. Thank you very kindly.
And you're right. Your dad is a far better man. I don't know him, but I know his son, and if he's anything like his son, hey, it'd be hard to beat him.
I'll never equal him. But thank you, Sarge.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care. The idea that has been put together, Sean out there at Nova M and with Sarge, and Sarge invited us. We hope since the Bush administration cares about as much about the Gulf Coast as a hog does about a Sunday suit, and because this administration is made up of people who think that government must by definition fail because government can't do anything, well, that's why it's failed. You know, these same people want to rebuild Iraq and they can't rebuild New Orleans. But there are very real needs, and they are real needs that can be met with relative ease by people in the listening audience. Do you have access to children's clothing? Box it up and send it. There are lots of children that need clothing. Toys. Adult clothing, you know, serviceable and good. Box it up and send it. Jim Yancey will be thrilled to death. And I don't, maybe some of you in more northern climes have it in your heads, and I'm not being mean, but have some notion that January on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi is balmy and tropical. It ain't. And the wind that comes in off the Gulf this time of year, well, I've known people from far northern points, and they've said it is colder in that kind of cold at 32 degrees than it is in northern cold at 10 below zero. So blankets, clothing, appliances. I hope we can figure out some way to round up usable people. You know, that's the thing. We are the disposal culture. We really do get rid of refrigerators that work perfectly well because we get tired of looking at what color they are. Or we've got white, but we want one of those spiffy new stainless steel looking ones like we see on the Food Network all the time. Ooh, am I guilty of that?
You don't get it, though.
No, I don't get no stainless steel refrigerator. Don't get no. Oh my God! There's about 8 years worth of grammar school teachers spinning in their graves right now. Don't get no. But at any rate, we replace things that work perfectly well. And what I hope we can do is figure out a way to load up a couple of trucks with that kind of stuff and send it south. And I told Dr. Bill about this yesterday, and he was very excited. So, be thinking along those lines. You know, the way we run this network, your input is critical. It is absolutely the sine qua non of everything that happens here. You send in music, you send in ideas, you send in stories. You make sure that I and other hosts on this network don't miss out on the big stuff, because some of us have, you know, adult onset ADD, and we're like, oh, look, a squirrel. Why is France so far away? And so, you know, you keep us focused. Are we having carrots for dinner? No. And I have a feeling we can accomplish this as well. And what it will mean is beyond estimation. So we'll keep you posted as things develop. We'll find that list that Jim Yancey says he needs. And, you know, he can always use money. You know, every time you start talking about something that needs solving, you could, as sure as God made little green apples and the little green apples have worms in them, some conservative will pop his pointy little head up and go, that's the thing with you liberals. You think that money solves every problem. Well, the fact is, there aren't many problems a lot like this that money doesn't solve. Money buys water heaters. Money buys bundles of shingles for roofs. Money buys food.
You Democrats just want to make another social program. What you need to do is pick yourselves up by your bootstraps like Trent Lott did.
Oh, I hate him. I just hate. How many times have you heard that?
It's another social program, or another taxpayers. It's your money. But
everybody's quiet as the grave, while the corporate welfare flows out to the Exxons and the Archer Daniels Midlands and the Monsantos. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens as we try to develop this. And I hope you are as well. Now, you know, I don't know where it's gone, but we've put another hour of programming away with your help. And I hope you'll help more in the next one. You know the phone number. I have been accused, by the way, of not. We apparently don't have the call-in number prominently displayed on the main page of the website. Or at least I was told in an email that we don't. Maybe I missed it. Maybe the correspondent missed it. But the phone number is 877-443-2366. Learn it, know it, use it. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
On her belly like a reptile. Just one thin dime, one-tenth of a dollar. Step right up, folks!
I went and bought myself a ticket and I sat down in the very first row.
This is the Quality News Network. Former President Gerald Ford said he did not think the Iraq War was justified. That in a July 2004 Washington Post interview embargoed at his request until after his death. The former president said he would have pursued alternatives to invasion and that he, quote, strongly disagreed, end quote, with President Bush. Ford died Tuesday at his home in California. He was 93. Ceremonies begin tomorrow for the former president at a California church and will end 5 days later with his internment next to his presidential museum in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Ford will lie in state at the Capitol Rotunda and outside the chambers of the House and Senate. President Bush says he's making good progress in coming up with a fresh strategy on Iraq and plans to seek more advice before announcing a revised plan in January. Bush gathered with his top advisors today at his Texas ranch. Former North Carolina Democratic Senator and 2004 Vice Presidential candidate John Edwards today formally announced he will run for president in 2008. He made the announcement in an area of New Orleans hardest hit by Hurricane Katrina. Edwards says his campaign will focus on eliminating poverty in the U.S., among other issues. Airlines are canceling flights and snowplows are in the streets of Denver today as another major storm blows toward the city. 2 feet of snow still remains on the ground from last week's paralyzing blizzard and around 18 inches of snow are forecast for the area starting today. In New York, a white horse-drawn carriage carried the body of music legend James Brown through the streets of Harlem to the Apollo Theater where thousands of people waited to say farewell to the godfather of soul. In world news, Iraqis are bracing for the impending execution of former leader Saddam Hussein after a warning by his political movement that, quote, grave consequences, end quote, would follow. Hussein's lawyers are asking that he continue to be held by the U.S. as a prisoner of war. Hussein's execution must be carried out before January 27th or within 30 days after the Iraqi High Tribunal upheld his death sentence as required by Iraqi law. Today is the first day of the annual Hajj pilgrimage in Mecca, Saudi Arabia. Nearly 3 million Muslims from around the world are participating this year. In Mogadishu today, Islamic forces abandoned the capital as Somali troops entered unopposed, putting an end to 6 months of domination of the capital by a radical Islamic movement. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Today, the Food and Drug Administration declared that meat and milk from cloned animals are safe to eat. The federal government agency declared cloned livestock as virtually indistinguishable from regular livestock and thus probably not subject to any special labeling, though that decision is still pending. NASA officials say progress is being made on outlining a mission to an asteroid. Aeronautical experts are planning a prospective piloted stopover, which could provide samples of space rock and would also test equipment for other space destinations. A preliminary report on the project is due next month. November home sale prices took a slide while home sales jumped slightly in the same month. Experts say the unexpected upturn could be an indication that the U.S. real estate market is beginning to stabilize. Giving no explanation, the JCPenney company fired its chief operating officer, Catherine West, after just 6 months on the job, effective immediately. Company stock fell nearly one percentage point on the news of her dismissal. Several U.S. airlines have launched ticket price cuts. United began the post-holiday fare reductions and was quickly followed by American, Delta, Northwest, and Continental. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.53 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 9 points at 12,501, the NASDAQ was down 6 points at 2425, and the S&P 500 was down 2 points at 1424. There is more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Five and a half minutes after the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid, head-on for a Thursday night. And an email from our good friend Cindy. My comments earlier about Richard Valeriani's blog posting. I ran into it over at Huffington Post. Go over there, have a look. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up. He blamed Ford losing the 1976 presidential election on Chevy Chase. Isn't it interesting that these conservatives... And also along the way, he gets in a nice slime, whatever you want to call it, against Jimmy Carter, but they can't. They are so good at preaching personal responsibility at the rest of us, while taking none of it for themselves. Gerald Ford lost the 1976 presidential election in part because he circumvented, nay, cheated the justice system from being able to prosecute an absolute criminal in the form of Richard Nixon. Oh, they didn't understand me, Abe. Standing there talking to the portraits in the White House. Jesus God. But Cindy writes and says, Valeriani's comment about the Saturday Night Live skit and the Ford dog skit and the earlier comment about bloggers watching YouTube... The geriatric generation of conservatives just won't let go. They want to control us until we pound them into their vapid graves, the bastards. Smacks of history in a way you may not remember because you're so much younger than I am, she says. You know, I'm tickled to be thought of as young. This is the method they use to shut up the younger generation. They called us dirty hippies, communist scum and so forth, and they haven't stopped. It's a method to discredit us, and I refuse to be discredited. Right. You don't let them get away with it. You counter it. You fight back. And, you know, that's the one thing that we do have to, and we have to make sure that we pound that message in to the congressional majority now, lest they get all warm and fuzzy and feel like bipartisanship is the order of the day. It is not. You don't get all bipartisan with a retreating enemy. I mean, do you think that if Dear Leader's approval numbers were even above 50%, that he would have waited this long to tell us his double secret probation plan for winning in Iraq? Of course not. And yet, now, you know, at first we well, you know, he's going to tell us the way forward in Iraq before Christmas. Well, we can't do it before Christmas. He's got all those things. It's Christmas, for God's sakes. There's things he's got. You know, we'll tell you right after Christmas. We'll tell you right after the New Year. No. Now it's, we'll tell you sometime between the national championship game and March Madness. Nah, we'll tell you before the State of the Union address. How's that? That's when we'll tell you what the way forward is in Iraq. That'll be okay with you, won't it? He's consulting with people. That's the ticket. He's consulting with people about the way forward. Consulting people. Way. Yeah. That, yeah. Yeah. If his approval numbers were 40%, he'd be telling us that we're going to surge forward and we're going to make Baghdad a safer place for freedom and democracy to take root as we turn a corner into liberty for the Iraqi people. Don't you think? Yeah. Sure. But no, we have to wait a decent interval now that we've had a great American president pass away. We can't be talking about our way forward. In the course of some of this slimy business about Gerald Ford, I've heard a lot of this and a lot of that. But older people. I was 11 years old watching a bunch of this crap unfold. 12 years old, 13, 12, 13, even. And I remember. Do you? How much are they going for on eBay these days? Anybody still got a win button? I'm not talking about the Workers Independent News. No. No, way back in Gerald Ford world, we had crippling, crushing, stagnant inflation. In fact, they just they ran the two words together like a good German compound noun, and they call it stagflation. And it seemed like it was here forever, and it would never let go. And it was an absolute millstone around Gerald Ford's neck. And I don't know why I hung this on a brain cell that I have not yet subsequently destroyed. But I remember him standing up there and, you know, that high-pitched voice that he had. My fellow Americans, I want you all to wear a win button. See, it says win. You know what that means, my fellow Americans? That means whip inflation now. And somehow or another, and I couldn't make the connection then, and I cannot to this day make the connection. But somehow or another, wearing a dumbass button was gonna revamp the economy? But he had crippling inflation. And you know what? When Jimmy Carter took over the reins at the White House, he dealt with that inflation too. And yet, time after time after time after time, anytime you hear one of these right-wing freaks, I don't care if it's Hannity or Falafel Boy or, what's his in Atlanta, the Beats, Borts, they talk about Jimmy Carter and they talk about inflation, like it was invented during the Carter presidency. Is it too much to ask for just a little itty bitty bit honesty in the discourse? Can we not talk about the fact that Gerald Ford inherited his inflation problems from Richard Nixon, who was so busy being just creepy that he couldn't attend to the business of the nation? That all these inflation problems in the modern era originated with Richard Nixon, and the crap flowed downhill to Gerald Ford? And that it was so mind-numbingly awful that he had to spend some portion of what was even then probably a pretty respectable White House PR budget to put out little red buttons with white letters on them that said, "Win for whip inflation now?" That was the Ford administration, right? I mean, I'm sure if you asked Tony Snow or Sean Hannity or any of those goobers, they'd tell you that the win buttons came out on Jimmy Carter's watch, but I'm pretty sure that the win buttons were Jerry Ford's. Just like the liberation of Poland during the debate with Jimmy Carter was Jerry Ford's. And we've forgotten that. And I hope it is a long, long time before it ever happens. But when Jimmy Carter does move on, they will not say Jimmy Carter dead, and it will not be two more words before the word inflation comes up. Or, as Bart Kopp noted, rabbit. Why can't we talk about the malaise that infected this country in the middle 70s? Why can't we talk about the broken military that was broken by Republican policies? Well, we can't talk about that because there aren't enough of me and Mike Malloy and Guy James and Dr. Bill and Joe Vecchio. We'll talk about those kind of things, but there aren't enough. There aren't enough Sam Cedars. Because, okay, yeah, I'm a little bit mean about Gerald Ford. I'm breaking the Bambi Thumper rule. But mostly we're just talking about facts. But there are so few people talking about facts, and so many, so very many multimillionaire right-wing yammerheads talking about fantasy, that it could be argued with some credibility that this nation is in the midst of some sort of delusional psychosis. Jimmy Carter was a bad president? You know what? I hear Democrats say that, and it makes me mad. He was far from perfect. If you are going to aspire to the White House, you will have made a deal with the devil long before your hand hits the Bible. You will have screwed people, blued people, and tattooed people to achieve that level of power. Jimmy Carter, the most openly evangelical church-going Sunday school-teaching man ever to occupy the White House? And the right-wing religion industry monkeys talk about him like he's carrying a social disease. And that do-nothing piece of garbage, Ronald Reagan, that followed him and only got the White House by virtue of dirty tricks. You'll notice the hostages in Iran were kept alive, thanks to the Carter administration, so that they could be held Dig that. I mean, does it make you just want to howl and beat on the walls when you think about the fact that the Republican Party cared more about gaining power in 1980 than they did about the hostages in the embassy in Tehran? They cared more about power than they did about bringing those people home. And the Reagan team said, listen, don't make any deals with Carter. We'll have a deal for you when we get in office. You know, you need some weapons, don't you? Well, we'll arm you to the damn teeth. And you'll send our hostages home. They cared and you know, violated the law, the Constitution, rules of common human decency in the process. And this is all, every last bit of it, an outgrowth of the presidency of Gerald Ford. Do you think for a moment that Dick Cheney or George Bush would have ordered the illegal wiretapping of American citizen phone calls if Richard Nixon had been made an example for them and him sitting in a prison cell rotting the rest of his days away for violating the Constitution? Do you think they would have had the temerity to attempt that? Would there be people rotting in prisons, goat herders and nobodies from the hills and hollers of Afghanistan? And would they be in Guantanamo being tortured 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Would Canadian citizens be rendered by the United States to Syria for a year-long torture in a coffin-sized cell if the living example of Richard Nixon sitting in a prison cell was there staring Dick and Rummy and Condi and George squarely in the eye? I don't use the fun words that I was kind of ashamed for my mother to know that I knew how to use, God rest her soul, on this program. But all this business about Gerald Ford was proved right in his pardoning of Richard Nixon has me about this close to calling bullshit on the load of it. Oops. Because that is exactly what it is. It was not a national healing. It was not a national reconciliation. It was not a means by which our national nightmare could end. Our national nightmare didn't end. The sleeper was just given a little second all and sent back to the horror. Isn't that the case? And is there... Why? I don't think what we're talking about here is so radical or out of the ordinary that it can't possibly have occurred to any of the well-paid martini and heroin at 4:30 in the afternoon Washington press corps. They know. You know. We know. We're very knowledgeable. But of course, you gotta send Gerald R. Ford back to Grand Rapids. Saying good things about him. And apparently, where the media in the United States is concerned, are concerned, saying good things is so much more important than reporting the facts that lying becomes okay. And it is an outright, unmitigated falsehood, a dirty, rotten, filthy, stinking lie to suggest that any good whatsoever ever came from the pardon of Richard M. Nixon. For God's sakes, what, 1986? A little more than a decade after the Ford presidency, and you've got the American media declaring, well, we can't impeach Ronald Reagan because we can't stand to have a constitutional crisis. Horse feathers! The constitutional crisis happens when you do not adhere to the Constitution. We did not adhere to the Constitution with Richard Nixon. And that gave us Gerald Ford. And Gerald Ford did not adhere to the Constitution. And that, by God, gave us Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush sitting in behind a microphone in Buffalo a couple of years ago saying, of course, I mean, if we're talking about wiretaps, of course, I'm always talking about a court order. That's just the law. Whenever you have a wiretap, you got to have a court order. At a time when his NSA was listening in on every blessed phone conversation that took place in the United States and doing it without a court order. And doing it without a constitution. And that is the legacy. That is the love child of the pardon of Richard M. Nixon by Gerald Ford. And we are paying. The generation before us has paid. And the generation after us will continue to pay. Because with every one of those instances, the Constitution of the United States has been dealt a blood wound. To the point that now we get a Democratic majority and people say and Democrats say things like, well, we have to govern from the center. It doesn't matter. You know, if George Bush came in here and shot Hillary Clinton in right there when she was standing in the Senate, just blew her away, you know, we'd let him. Because you see, we have to govern from the center. It's true, isn't it? I mean, these people who say that, well, you know, impeachment is off the table. I think it's fair that we be able to ask them, what could George Bush do that would make you put it back on the table? Would cold-blooded murder get it back on the table? How about the unprovoked use of nuclear arms? What if we found out that Bush administration policies had little children in prison garb locked up inside the United States and their only crime was of being the children of Mexican people? Would that be enough? How much? Where's the standard? And all of this flows logically and inexorably out of Gerald Ford's naked ambition for power. He was brought into the presidency expressly for the purpose of pardoning Richard Nixon. And all these so-called constitutional crises or lack thereof or inability to tolerate or live through all of that garbage flows straight from the administration of America's first unelected president. Wow. Like I said, I was a kid watching some of this go down, and I remember thinking, unelected president? That's not right. Well, maybe that'll never happen again. Every time I use the word never. Let's go to the phone. Susan joins us from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
The win buttons were definitely Ford, according to Wikipedia.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And as somebody who lived through that era, I agree with Mike Malloy. my opinion of Ford is highly negative and highly unprintable. One thing I can say on the air is he healed nothing. The only thing that Ford did was put a dirty bandage over the sore that was Vietnam, and Iraq has ripped that bandage off to reveal the gangrene underneath.
Yeah. We have hidden a whole bunch of rot in the name of what do we call it, Susan? What is this that this paternalistic nanny notion that somehow or another the American people can't stand to watch their Constitution actually work?
Well, I can think of several words for it, but none of them are usable on the air. There is this paternalistic idea that they just, you know, that the people of this country are so stupid and so emotionally incapable of handling. One of the pundits last night even brought up, you know, that Ford provided unity that we hadn't felt since November 22nd, 1963.
Oh God, I'm glad I missed that one. There would have been, one of those Elvis gun moments.
I went ballistic. My husband practically had to peel me off the ceiling. Oh, yeah, he was likening it to the Kennedy assassination. I just went, Ford healed nothing. He helped nothing. The proof in the pudding is the very next national election. Between 40 and 50 Republican congressmen and senators went down the toilet.
Yeah.
Just out of office. Because the American people, P.O.'d. I mean, we were tough.
Well, you know, didn't we get one of the Arab oil embargoes somewhere around Gerald Ford?
Oh, I lose track of them.
Wasn't there a 73 and a 75?
Yeah, there was more than one. I know the heavy duty one was during Carter's.
But I mean, can we stop with this idea that that Gerald Ford was some sort of a moderate Republican?
No, he was anything but.
I mean, anybody that wants to impeach a sitting Supreme Court justice over the content of a magazine in which his article appears, a wingnut. That's a 1970 model wingnut.
Yeah, and on top of that, you mentioned the crushing inflation.
Yeah. I mean, interest.
The reason we had that inflation was because of, wait for it, Nixon's, and I hate to admit it, Johnson's illegal war.
Yeah, right. And I don't know how to tell the Republicans this, but if they stay in Iraq much longer, we're going to see it come back.
Oh yeah, it's coming back. The Fed keeps talking about inflation. Guess what, troops? It's back. You want to combat inflation, people?
Get out of Iraq.
Gold.
Well, there's buy gold, or there's get out of Iraq.
Yeah, get out of Iraq, but until we can get these idiots to defund this war, get start putting your money in hard currency because it's going to be worth nothing. I lived through that. It's painful. And if you've got a adjustable rate mortgage, I suggest you refinance your house real quick.
Yeah, those things. Yeah, and balloons. Oh, balloons suck.
Yeah, balloons are really, really bad. I learned the hard way because of that inflation. If I go in to borrow money for a house or something, and they start talking about it, no, I don't want to even talk about that. It's fixed or nothing.
Yeah. Well, that overflowed into the Carter administration. God, what were weren't there home loans out there 18-19%?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, it was awful, and another reason why Carter was defeated was because he had to step in and clean up the mess the Republicans made.
Yeah, and you know what? I would think that there might be a little lesson involved in all of that. For the 2008 cycle?
Yeah. Pay attention, folks.
You know, because...
clean up their mess.
Well, the Republicans didn't want to put anybody up there to run in 1970. You know, Ronald Reagan made a run at it. But he wasn't quite viewed as the God among us that he later became to the Republican Party. He hadn't refined his message yet, and frankly, the Republicans weren't that keen on having the White House in 1976 because things were in such a horrific mess. It was made perfectly sense. You know, these are not stand and fight people. Whether it's political or it's actual warfare. They are cowards. Okay, these Republicans.
Oh,
they run from the actual fighting. And they would have actually had to work. God knows when there's been a Republican president who actually worked at his job.
You know what they remind me a lot of? An untrained puppy. He leaves a mess and then tries to make you think that he didn't do it.
Yeah, sits, you know, somewhere on the other side of the room. Oh, no, no, that was that other, that was the invisible puppy.
Yeah, that was the invisible puppy. He did it. Wasn't me.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he tries to make you think somebody else did it.
Yeah, or a child. That was Sis that broke the cookie jar. Well, what's with the cookie crumbs around your mouth? She made me eat them.
Yeah, it's just the truth. They are the most incredible. They never really grew up.
Well, I suspect in 2008, Susan, they will be more than happy
to hand over the White House.
To hand over the White House to whoever can win that battle. And I don't know if anybody else is saying it. I suspect others are. If we do not get out of Iraq before the 2008 elections, whatever Democrat wins that election is screwed for the entire term of that man or woman's presidency.
That's why we need to defund this war now. Bush is already doing his third. He's putting 3,500 more troops in Kuwait, where he's going to slip them over the border into Iraq just as soon as he can get the trucks there.
Mm-hmm. And it will suck to have the Iranians in their rear.
So you know, he's doing exactly what he wanted all along.
Yeah,
now,
this
all
is
all of this bit about the Iraq study group. It was smoke.
Sure it was. And so was the way forward. The way forward, you know, screw that word surge. I'm sick of surges. Surges are tidal effects, and they happened in Katrina, and we didn't handle those surges very well.
Yeah.
No, these aren't surges. This is a plain old-fashioned, this is a plain old-fashioned Johnsonian escalation of the war.
Exactly. This is the bombing of Cambodia.
Sure it is, and it's also pouring more troops into a meat grinder in a war that simply cannot be won. It cannot be won militarily, and
right.
And we forget that in the Iraq Study Group report, you know, that's not some raging liberal me saying that. Of course, I've been saying that. That, you know, the Iraq Study Group report says it cannot be won militarily.
Well, personally, I think the Iraq Study Group was basically a smokescreen from day one.
Sure it was.
They were created just to say exactly that, to quiet all the critics down, and then they could go along and do what they plan to do anyway.
And, you know, there's a story out there, Susan, that says, well, quietly behind the scenes, new defense secretary Robert Gates is opposing the surge. Oh, he's working behind the scenes. That means he's a cowardly little rat who doesn't have the guts to say it publicly to the people who are paying his salary.
Yeah, you know, it's just it's a bunch of horse crap. Pardon my language, but it is.
That's okay. You did better than I did. That one just
sorry. I'm going to cut loose. It's just, you know, it's the whole thing is a smokescreen.
Yeah.
It has been from day one. I didn't buy it. I didn't buy the boat, just like I didn't buy the Gulf of Tonkin resolution.
Oh, yeah. And let's not forget the Mayaguez.
Oh, yeah.
Gerald Ford and the Mayaguez. And what was it, 4 Marines that were left to die?
Oh, yeah. Let's not forget those 4 Marines. Oh, yeah. You had to bring that up. Now I'm getting madder. And there was another thing. If you have a chance, download Mike Malloy's show from last night. It will knock your socks off. One of the things he had to say was, guess who was the last person to die that had anything to do with the investigation of John Kennedy's assassination?
Yeah, oh yeah, Gerald Ford.
And guess who helped cover it up?
Single bullet theory, yeah.
Yeah, and guess who made some changes that he shouldn't have.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah. And it turns out that some Watergate plumbers were in Dallas.
Well, you know...
You need to listen to Mike Morris.
Well, I will. I'll check that out. You know, and I've been bothered by that story ever since it came out a month or so ago about the discovery of the CIA agents who were present in the Ambassador Hotel for no good reason.
Uh-huh.
The night that Bobby was killed.
Yeah, and you know the story about Bush Sr. being in Dallas?
Oh, yeah.
I've seen that picture. He was on the steps.
Again, yeah, what I said earlier, I cling and hold fast to, Susan. Everything that we are living through now got birthed.
From him.
From Gerald R. Ford.
Yes. He made it impossible to find out what actually happened. Short of a time machine, and I don't think we're going to get one of those anytime soon. He's birthed us to another war, and anybody who thinks not had better look at history.
Exactly.
He's birthed us a totally screwed up constitution, because, let's face it, you can't impeach.
Yeah, let's not forget the fact that where dear leader won't veto anything, Gerald Ford vetoed everything coming and going.
Yeah.
Absolutely refused to work with the Congress.
Right, and which is really funny because they're going to have him lying in state in Congress.
Yeah, oh, I know.
Oh, you know, that's irony beyond belief. You know, it's just hysterical.
Well, you know, at some point the Ford death orgy has to come to an end.
Personally, I think Senator Byrd's probably sitting in his office just trying to decide whether he should laugh or cry.
Well, that's probably true.
Because, of, you know, I know he had massive battles with Ford's administration.
Yeah, that was back when Senator Byrd was, shall we say, a little feistier.
Yeah, well... Bird was always...
Or a little more physically able to be feisty.
Yeah, well, Bird was always a strict constructionist, and let's face it, Ford was playing fast and loose when he did his number with the pardon, you know.
Oh, and that's the thing, you know, lest we forget, the pardon was negotiated.
Oh, yeah. It was planned.
No. The terms of the pardon were dictated by Richard Nixon.
Yeah. And Kissinger.
God. Susan, I'm going to roll on, but thank you so much.
You have a really good night, and I'm glad to have you back.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
I hope everything turns out okay for you.
Thank you. Thank you very kindly.
Bless.
Take care.
Bye
now.
Bye-bye.
And on to our good friend Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Doing okay. You?
Pretty good. I hear what you're saying, but I don't agree with all of it. Going back to Richard Nixon was a very seriously flawed individual, and he had a lot of problems. And he could have probably gone down in history as one of our greater presidents had he been not a part of that business with the plumbers and Watergate. You know that. I mean, looking back at Nixon, I mean, he could negotiate very well with the Soviets and with the Chinese. He founded the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts.
Oh, absolutely. And he remains the only president ever to propose a living wage for all Americans.
Exactly. And he was the last friend of the civil service that was ever sitting in the Oval Office.
I understand all of that, but it all sort of fell crumbling down when he decided that the government, and particularly the presidency, was his own personal fiefdom, didn't it?
Well, Richard Nixon was so paranoid about everything. I mean, he was paranoid about the fact that, and I will say this about John Kennedy, let's face it, there are questions about the Nixon-Kennedy, you know, election back in Cook County and how Cook County was bought for President Kennedy, God rest his soul, and he's just one of my favorite people, but I will say that. And I just can't quite buy all this thing about everything is being traced back to Gerald Ford. President Ford.
That's where you get Rummy.
I just don't. Well,
that's where you get Cheney, and Cheney. You know, Cheney has publicly stated that it was his experience in the Ford administration that gave him the impetus to believe in consolidating the powers of the executive, because he watched Ford be a so-called weak executive.
Well, this may very well be true, but can you imagine what would have happened if they had actually put Nixon in jail? Even if they had, the things that you're speaking of that have come later would have still happened.
I don't think so.
I believe it would. It's a matter of...
I don't believe that the death penalty serves as a deterrent to murder, but I think that for highfalutin politicians, the imprisonment of one of their own serves as a stark example to them that they tread upon the Constitution at their own peril.
Well, like you say, capital punishment has been proven not to stop capital crime. So, based on that particular theorem, I don't think it would have hurt these people one iota. I really don't. And Senator Byrd made the statement yesterday or today that Ford was one of the most decent people he ever knew. Now, I'm just.
Well, we are absolutely awash in statements of Ford's decency. I'm not questioning his decency, Jim. I'm questioning his.
I mean, you know, you're making him look like he's just one of the worst people to sit in the White House since Adolf Hitler sat in the castle in Berlin.
I'll buy that.
I don't think so. I don't agree, Bob. It just don't.
Well, I don't see what is there good to say about him. I mean, he was a wonderful tennis partner. Okay. I remember the early days, right after he took office, we had video news footage of him cooking his own breakfast. Hurrah for Gerald Ford. Now, what did he do?
Listen, the burden of proof's not on me. It's on you. You're the one accusing him. You're the prosecutor.
No. Well, I've laid it out. I mean, you're suggesting that, I'm not, he's certainly not the monster George Bush is.
No, he's not.
I guess you could say that...
Compared to George Bush, Gerald Ford is an angel. And compared to the type of Republicans we have today, the type of Republican Gerald Ford was, he's not nearly a third as as bad as these people are.
Oh, he was he was kind of loopy, Jim. I mean,
I don't
come
know
on.
Kind of loopy. I mean, what's the operational definition of that?
Leading an impeachment effort against a sitting Supreme Court justice in 1970 because an article appeared in a magazine that had art nude photos in it.
Well, you know, you
had, I mean, he did that.
You had Tipper Gore saying almost the same thing about a lot of things.
Tipper Gore wasn't president.
I know, but I'm just talking about people and their opinion. And, of course, did his effort succeed? No, they didn't, did they?
That doesn't make it any less nutty.
Well,
I mean, the reason it didn't succeed was because it was nutty.
I guess what I'm trying to tell you is it is so easy to go back and try to psychoanalyze dead people and things that have happened in history.
I really am not trying to psychoanalyze him, Jim.
Well,
I'm trying to talk about the real world effects and impacts of his presidency.
I really don't think Ford could have really done anything else than what he did as far as pardoning Nixon is concerned. And, you know, it brought it, because if you had taken Nixon into the whole thing, you talk about a mess, that would have been one. That whole thing had to be brought to an end, and if Richard Nixon got a get-out-of-jail-free card, then that's the way history is going to read it and write it. Of course, it is.
No, we can't change it. There's no getting around that.
Nixon, of course, now...
But it had a profound impact
and
on our...
I'll say this, and please hear me out, sir.
Go ahead.
I voted for Richard Nixon, okay? I voted for him. He's the last Republican I voted for, but I voted for him.
68 or 72?
Both times.
Okay.
And I don't agree with everything that he did, but I know that Nixon later went on in his later years, I think, to repent, basically, of what a lot of things, not repent, but he did pay for his sins. He left office in disgrace, total disgrace, unmitigated disgrace. And he went on later to become a sort of Elvis statesman who was very respected throughout the rest of the world.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the disgrace issue, Jim.
But he did.
Just earlier today, I was watching, that's one of the beauties of YouTube, I was watching outtakes of him before he delivered his resignation speech. And he's yucking it up on the camera. Didn't look like a man in disgrace to me.
Well, I mean, you know, what else could he do?
Well, he knew he'd gotten away with it. He knew the deal had already been cut. He wasn't going to do prison time. All he was going to have to do was leave an office that had become, if you read the biographers, incredibly oppressive to him.
Well, I think it was more than even that. I mean, when you read Nixon, a biography of Nixon, and a study of some of the stuff he did, I mean, he was, as you yourself said, anybody is not going to be teaching Sunday school who is going to go and sit in the Oval Office, correct?
Well, yeah, you've made your deal with the devil. We actually did have a president who taught Sunday school, but yeah.
I mean, let's just face it. You don't get there 1,500 Pennsylvania Avenue by being Mr. Nice Guy and being all things to all people.
No, there's a mindset that wants that job.
And I'm just being, and I'm trying to be fair to as many people as I can possibly be fair to, but I just can't see this almost direct link, this sort of apostolic succession that you're promoting tonight between Gerald Ford and George W. Bush of today. I think if they had put Nixon in jail, that you would have had an even worse type of scenario to follow, if you can imagine it, than actually followed.
Well, okay, flesh that out a little bit, Jim.
After Ford, was defeated and Jimmy Carter became president in 1976, I mean, the Carter presidency, and I have a great deal of respect for President Carter, even much more so for the times after he left office. I mean, he was not the greatest president we've ever had. But he will go down in history as being one of the most decent human individuals who did sit and occupy the Oval Office, and probably one of the most intelligent.
Well, what would have happened to America, do you think? And I realize we're speculating, Jim, but what would have happened in this country had Richard Nixon been tried and or imprisoned?
Oh, you would have had an ounce of crying, and you would have had such a division in this country.
For what?
Oh, for good Lord, because a lot of people didn't like the idea of what happened to Nixon. There were a lot of people who didn't.
Well, okay, and I think you're opening the door, Jim, to a legitimate discussion here, and frankly, it's at the heart of this idea of the so-called unitary executive that the Bolsheviks promote, and that is literally that because he is president, the president is incapable of breaking the law.
Well,
Nixon himself advanced that theory.
Well, Nixon claimed back then it was called executive privilege.
No. This is beyond executive privilege. Nixon and his people, including Cheney and Rumsfeld, actually advanced the theory that the president, by virtue of being president, cannot be held accountable and cannot be deemed to have broken the law.
Well, these were people who came to power under Gerald Ford, and if that's what they did, that's what they did. And as far as...
I mean, that strikes...
Gerald Ford, you know, was the only unelected president he's ever had, and he left office 2 years after he became president and disappeared into the dustbin of history, so to speak. And even he today, posthumously, says that what Bush had done in going into Iraq was wrong.
Yeah, I know. I haven't gotten to that yet. That's a sublime act of cowardice.
Well, it's so easy for you to sit there and call people names and this, that, and the other.
I'm not calling anybody names, Jim.
Coward. I mean, you know,
I said it was
know.
A sublime act of cowardice, and it is that. If he truly believed that in 2004, then as an American, as an elder statesman, he had an obligation to come out and say so.
Did he?
I believe so, yes. I believe, and I believe that turning a blind eye to manifest evil is evil in and of itself.
Well, I can't.
We hold the entire world to the Nuremberg standards, and that is part and parcel of it.
I cannot penetrate the mind of Gerald Ford, and I'm certainly not going to do it now that the man is dead. And, you know, and I'm not going to go up there and urinate on his grave. And I just don't agree with all that.
I don't blame you. It's cold in Grand Rapids this time of year.
Well, I mean, I don't know what that means. But anyway, I just don't think that, you know, it's doing any good to go back and dig all this stuff up. And, you know, we've got
I disagree with you because I believe that is the very essence of history, is attempting to learn from our past mistakes. And Gerald Ford made a boatload of them.
Well, I can't name one that has been present and hasn't.
Well, I have. I've named a bunch of them.
Who haven't made serious...
Oh, no. Presidents? I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. No. I'm not saying others haven't made... But these things, in light of the orgy of Ford worship that we're having to tolerate now, right down to the fact that the right-wingers are hollering for the next supercarrier to be named after Gerald Ford. Oh, my God.
Well...
This is over the top, and it deserves to at least be refuted somewhere along the way. If I'm the guy who does it, so be it.
Well, yeah, if you want to, but I mean, you know, I don't see any orgy of Ford worship now. I really don't. I just don't perceive what you perceive, and you know, the fact that it was announced that former President Ford had expired when he did. And, you know, I really just can't see the point in going back and digging all this stuff up for the sake of learning from the lessons of history, because if you want to take that theory, when have we ever learned from the lessons of history?
Well, we certainly didn't learn anything from history. At least some of us didn't. I think there were a great many thousands, maybe millions of us who did, who learned a great lesson out of Vietnam that could have prevented Iraq. But the people in power, again, people who learned their political statecraft at the feet of Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, did not learn those lessons.
Well, you know, I think President Ford was 90 years old when he made the statement back in 2004, and he did not want the statement to be made public. I mean, that is his prerogative. He was no longer bound by anything to say anything. He didn't even have to say that, Bob.
Right, but why say it if you want to keep it a secret?
Well, there are a lot of things that people don't want to be disclosed while they're still amongst the living.
I mean, one of my personal heroes, Samuel Clemens, wrote some stuff that was only published posthumously. But it wasn't published posthumously because he said, don't publish it until I'm dead. It was his publisher saying, you are a beloved figure and we won't publish it until you're dead.
Well?
In the case of Gerald Ford, if it was important enough to say, and if it was important enough to say that Dick Cheney was being overly pugnacious, and this man was a revered elder statesman to the Republican Party, which and a moderate to boot, which is how he is being portrayed in the media.
Yeah, he is. Well, I think he was.
I don't.
Compared to what you guys are now.
But well, and what we're getting at is my thesis on this. The reason he didn't want it said in
Ford was an absolute saint.
The reason he didn't want it put out, the reason he wasn't willing to have it put out publicly, is he knew that he would be pilloried by these hateful right-wing warmongering SOBs.
Well, maybe he wanted to live out the remainder of his days in peace.
Right.
Is there anything wrong with that? No.
Then why are you talking to Bob Woodward? I mean, it's not like this was overheard at a cocktail party. This was an interview granted to Bob Woodward.
Well, you know, I look at it as this. Perhaps on Mr. Ford's, or President Ford's part, this was an act of contrition, which is much more so than you'd ever get from any of those crowds who's sitting in there today. Do you not agree with that?
I don't know. I'm not theologically well versed enough to know whether or not whether a private mea culpa on a very public thing like the war in Iraq is...
No theology involved in what in an act of contrition, as far as I'm concerned. You don't have to be a theological expert. The man realized that what had happened was wrong, and he just preferred that it not be aired during his lifetime. I wish he had, but I mean that was...
I do too. I would have more respect for him if he had.
But at least I have enough respect for him to realize that he said, okay, we can do this, and he can do it after I'm gone, and maybe this will provide some type of help. I'm sure Gerald Ford had a very uneasy conscience about a lot of things and about a lot of the people who served under him. And I have no question about that.
Yeah,
but at least the man had, you know, the foresight enough to realize, look, make my act of contrition public, which is much more so than what we have today. The basis of my calling in tonight is to say simply this. Compared to George Bush and compared to Ronald Reagan and some of these other people who came after Ford, Ford was a saint compared to these guys. That's my whole...
Okay, well, I understand that. I just don't think that makes that level of comparative sainthood worth much.
Well, I mean, we know you don't believe in saints anyway, Bob.
No, I don't.
Well, I do.
But you know, saying that someone is, Von Ribbentrop was a saint compared to Hitler.
No, he wasn't, because the last thing Von Ribbentrop said before he hanged him. If Hitler walked into the gym where they were fixing to string him up, he'd do exactly the same thing over again.
Okay, Mussolini was a saint compared to Hitler. I mean, you get my point.
No, well, I mean, Mussolini, you know, was... Hell, he,
A guard that shuffled Jews into ovens in Treblinka was a saint compared to Hitler. What I'm saying is that the comparative nature of the saint analogy... is
Mussolini made the trains run on time and he drained the Pontine marshes, and for a lot of times a lot of Italians thought real well of him until he made the mistake of going to war, because the Italians are builders, they're workers, they're not fighters. And Mussolini the anti-Semitism in Italy was not nearly as virulent in Italy as it was in Germany. Only until the very latter stages of the war, when the Germans took over and established the state of Mussolini as their puppet. And Mussolini was one of the ones who tried to get Hitler not to go to war.
So, you see my point then. Jim, we're at the news time. I appreciate your thoughts.
I'm sure you do.
You take care now, all right?
All right, you too now. Don't get too hopped up.
Well, I'll try.
Good night.
Later. Let's do some news. You want to get in on this? This is fun. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4. Head on. I'm Bob Kincaid. And I'm not backing away from my thesis. How about you? We'll be back.
This is the Quality News Network. Ceremonies begin tomorrow at a California church for former President Gerald Ford and will end 5 days later with burial next to his presidential museum in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Ford will first lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda and outside the chambers of the House and Senate. Next Tuesday has been declared a day of national mourning. U.S. flags are being flown at half-staff. Before his passing, Mr. Ford said he didn't think the Iraq War was justified. In a 2004 Washington Post interview, embargoed at his request until after his death, the former president said he would have pursued alternatives to the invasion. He died Tuesday at his home in California at the age of 93. President Bush says he's making good progress in coming up with a fresh strategy on Iraq. He says he plans to seek more advice before announcing a revised plan next month. Meantime, in Baghdad, at least 28 Iraqis were killed today in violent attacks. 41 bodies were found across the city. The U.S. military reports that 3 more American soldiers and a Marine were killed by roadside bombs and combat. 99 American forces have been killed so far in December, making it the second deadliest month of the year for U.S. military troops. Former North Carolina Democratic Senator and 2004 vice presidential candidate John Edwards today formally announced he will run for president in 2008. He made the formal announcement in an area of New Orleans hardest hit by Hurricane Katrina. Airlines are canceling flights and snowplows are in the streets of Denver today as another major storm blows toward the city. 2 feet of snow still remains on the ground from last week's paralyzing blizzard and around 18 inches of snow are forecast for the area. That's starting today. In Indonesia, despite continued heavy rain, humanitarian aid groups today were able to begin delivering food, water, and medical supplies to 400,000 survivors of flooding and mudslides. At least 109 Indonesians have died in recent storms. Also in Mogadishu today, Islamic forces abandoned the capital as Somali troops entered unopposed, putting to an end a 6 months of domination of the capital by a radical Islamic movement. Temporary martial law will soon be declared, according to Somalian authorities. In Mexico, a passenger bus collided with a freight train today, killing at least 16. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business News is coming up next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Today, the Food and Drug Administration declared the meat and milk from cloned animals is safe to eat. Federal government agency declared cloned livestock is virtually indistinguishable from regular livestock and thus probably not subject to any special labeling, though that decision is still pending. NASA officials say progress is being made on outlining a mission to an asteroid. Aeronautical experts are planning a prospective piloted stopover, which could provide samples of space rock and would also test equipment for other space destinations. Preliminary report on that project is due next month. Advanced Micro Devices claiming a legal victory in its antitrust suit against rival Intel Corporation. Latest ruling from a federal court requires Intel to produce documents and other supporting evidence in connection with its business dealings with foreign chipmakers. AMD's suit accuses Intel of using anti-competitive computer chip sales worldwide. November home sale prices took a slide while home sales jumped slightly in the same month. Experts say the upturn could be an indication that the U.S. real estate market is beginning to stabilize. Light sweet crude trading at $60.53 a barrel, down 19 cents. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average hit an intraday high of 12,529 before dipping back down to an ending number of 12,501. NASDAQ down 5, S&P 500 down 2. More on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
10 past the hour as we roll into this third and final hour of our Thursday edition of Head On. I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am. I am Bob. A couple of emails. Cindy says, the point is this. When we make mistakes, that would be you, me, us, we either go broke, get divorced, or go to jail. When presidents make mistakes, we roll up history for the future in 30 years to decide and then lie when they die. She says, the caller is dead wrong. And adds that the embargoed Ford interview where he said he disagreed with the Iraq war decisions of the current Republican president proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that the man went to his grave caring more about his party than his nation. And of course, that's the way it is with Republicans. They do care more about their party than they do their country. That's why they wrap themselves in the flag and fly the bloody shirt at every opportunity and sponsor bills about flag burning and praying in school. Because after all, patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel. Was that my hero, Mr. Clemens, again? I think so. To the phones, our good friend David calls from near Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Bob, and gee whiz, was it Cindy? Was that who I just heard you read?
Yeah.
I'm only going to be able to buttress her argument because it's exactly the same thing I'm feeling. First and foremost, and I would have a slightly different take, what that tells you when Mr. Ford, a man of experience and potentially high impact or some sort of impact, and you know, it doesn't always take a ton to tip the scales in favor of this argument or that argument. If someone like Gerald Ford two plus years ago had been published as saying what he's saying, maybe things would have changed in America. But it tells me that G Gerald Ford cares more about his legacy than he cares about the 1,000 or so Americans that have been directly killed at the hands of George Bush and the 200, possibly 1,000 Iraqis that have been killed by George Bush, and the, let's say, round numbers, 10 to 12,000 Americans that have been maimed because of George Bush. He cares more for the possible adjustment of his own legacy than he cares about those deaths and maimings and broken families and spilled blood.
See, it's worth remembering, David, that when at the time that this interview was granted, some 3 years ago, we were still at a place in the United States where raising one's voice against the war was frequently met by screams of un-American, traitor.
Oh, at least traitor.
Yeah. Now, what would have happened if the elder statesman of the Republican Party had come out and said, this is wrong?
The elder statesman at that time that wasn't drooling into his own bib before the oatmeal came to him. Brother, you know, yeah, and what he wants to do is he wants to get that little blurb on the permanent record so that 30 years from now, somebody that doesn't quite care about being honest can neglect the fact that he hid that for the, it's already more than 2, could be 4, might be 6, who knows, could be 12 years until we stop killing people and losing our own in Iraq. He just wanted that on the record, you know, with a little smudge and a little fudge of the old permanent record, and Gerald Ford's legacy bumps up from a 6.2 to a 7.8. In that history thing that the winner's always right,
mm-hmm.
Ain't hindsight a grand thing?
Heartbreaking, you know.
Indeed.
I mean, I'm sorry. We are at a place now where it is fair to ask that if only someone would have stood up. No, not someone. Some more people had stood up. That we might not be talking about the 3,000th military death in Iraq.
Exactly.
I mean, there are psychological issues here that would put any decent psychologist's kids through graduate school. If you start dealing with the dynamics of George Bush and what drove him to do what he did in Iraq, and it wasn't weapons of mass destruction. And it wasn't a nuke is going to fall on London in 45 minutes. And it wasn't Saddam's going to get in a little rubber ducky raft and start rowing for the United States with a 5-gallon drum of sarin gas.
It was to outdo his daddy and get a cookie at bedtime from the peanut crowd.
Exactly. You know, oil? Yeah, oil's tangential. And maybe our side was a little bit... maybe we jumped the gun a little bit with the whole no blood for oil thing. But I don't think so. But it was tangential overall to the psychological dynamic that drove George Bush into this disaster. He was made for this disaster. This disaster was made for him.
What was the documentary that was giving background into... George Bush was barely into the, you know, into a term as a Texas governor, and there was George Shultz, and there was Condi, and there was two or three more of the old Star Chamber Kingmaker anointers from the Republican confab, and they all got together, and he pretty much went for a job interview, and they all looked at each other and said, was that 9/11 that was in, or was it something? I mean, Fahrenheit 9/11, or was it something else that was in? Where all of these kingmakers, especially George Shultz and Condi, said, we can use this guy. This little hood ornament, this this little monkey with his little symbols clanging together, this little bright shiny thing might seduce the American people. He's such a buffoon. He's such a boob. He's got both those brain cells whacking away in public for the joy of all. You know, America might fall for this idiot if we put $250 million in advertising behind him. Carl, you think you can make it work? I remember that incorrectly.
No, you don't. I can't remember which movie it is, but I've seen it, obviously. I don't think it's Fahrenheit 9/11. But no, you're absolutely.
The palace. Maybe it's the palace thing, or maybe it's the.
Yeah, it is. Bush family fortunes.
Well, there's, and I mean, it's not something they made up and said. We heard from a guy that served them coffee. These people were there. There's actual footage of it. So he went there, and they said, you know.
And that's the same time that they started sitting him down with the James Dobson and the religious right crowd.
Yes.
So that he could get the anointing.
And they set him down with some other people because isn't he the one that said, foreign policy, huh? What's that? I'm about baseball and drilling for oil. But foreign policy, no, not foreign.
Yeah, another it's a few more months, and he's standing up at a debate saying,
United States can't be involved in nation building. That is not the proper use of the United States military.
Exactly. He's just a pawn, and he is evil. But all these people want to tidy up their legacy so that they can, doctors bury their mistakes, and these guys want to rewrite history.
Well, I so badly want to get together with Sherman and Mr. Peabody. And, you know, I want to set the Wayback Machine, you know, not to 1999, but to whatever day it was that Barbara was potty training the poor little fool at gunpoint.
I'm sorry. You know, make me watch the Texas Chainsaw Massacre on acid, but please don't make me watch that.
Yeah, I know. Too much information. Way too much. But
it's fine.
No.
Hold on. Just for a second.
Go ahead.
This Gerald Ford is Mr. Nice Guy, Mr. Right Up the Middle, played football, great guy. Look, he was so dedicated to his career, he drove his wife nuts. Drove her into alcoholism and drug addiction. On a very straight up the middle, supposed to be in praise of his career, there's this wonderful segment of her retelling the story. I'd seen so little of Jerry. He came home one night unexpectedly and woke me in the night, and the first thing I said was, why are you here? And then he was on camera as the president, speaking about his time in Congress, saying, well, you know, I always tried to keep that surface of just another guy that was just there to do a job, and they all thought I was so moderate. But, well, I never wanted them to know everything I wanted to get done. I always wanted to be, well, a little bit more of a rebel, a little bit more of a man with an agenda than anyone could ever imagine. That's on film. So let's forget this nice guy just thinking about the goodness of America being preserved.
He would not have been tapped for the vice presidency of the United States by Richard Pinhead Nixon if he had been a moderate, David.
No, it was a long and tortured process. Carl Albert's came forth with it. Nixon wanted Conley, but the Republican Party said that's a turncoat Democrat and he is a social climber. We want no part of him. Then Nixon said, well, I don't want Rockefeller. He's too liberal, and I can't stand the idea of Reagan. He's so conservative, and he'll make too much trouble for us. And then they spent 3 days behind closed doors, and the next thing you know, this man, this person, this Ford guy turns up as the appointed vice president.
Well, you know, the appointment of Ford as vice president, probably the closest political parallel we have in the recent past, David, is the search that wound up with Denny Hastert.
Ugh.
Okay, yes, do you remember we Newt Gingrich had just been taken down for banging an intern like a cheap Chinese gong at the same time he was castigating Bill Clinton for doing the same thing. Only thing is, Newt was actually having sex with her.
Let's not forget that Newt filed for divorce with his first wife as she was in a bed dealing with cancer. Let's not forget that.
Absolutely not.
Shall we?
So Newt's got to go. So they go and they find David Livingston of Louisiana.
Oops.
Who turns out to have a little hooker problem. And not just a little hooker problem, but a little real live honest to goodness hanging from swinging from the chandeliers kinkiness hooker problem.
Pretty much like what was that, Fanny Fox or some, you know, the Potomac firecracker?
Oh yeah, Fanny Fox, sure.
Oh yeah, well anyway.
So there goes David Livingston. And they look and they look and they look. And you know it becomes the story of God negotiating with Lot over Sodom. You know, if I could just find one good Republican.
Oh please, is there no virgin anywhere?
Yeah, and so they come up with an ex private school wrestling coach.
That's creepy, right there.
From Illinois. Who managed to win his race because the guy who handed him his ass the first time through either died or quit, I can't remember which. And he has absolutely nothing to recommend him in the way of leadership skills.
None.
But more importantly, he also has no hookers in his background or little boys that they knew of.
That they knew about.
And thus you get Speaker of the House Denny Hastert. It's the same process with Gerald Ford. They had to go to a low-rent member of the House from Grand Rapids. I mean, if you, honest to God, if you think about the Republicans that got passed over for that, because they had to have a guy who was absolute milquetoast and would do as he was damned well told.
That's the most important thing that's been said all night. Party first, party second. And for the third rule, review rules 1 and 2.
And you know, I don't know why this is so hard for the media to get. He wasn't chosen because he was a moderate. He wasn't chosen because he was a healer. He was chosen because he was enough of a small-minded individual to do as he was told by the big dogs.
He was chosen because he wasn't the man that bad information was available on, and most importantly, he would do as he was told.
And I'll go so far, David, as to paranoid up and say that there was confidence that if we, you can almost hear the conversation. Well, my God, he couldn't win the presidency in 1976 if they ran a peanut farmer against him. He was not supposed to fill out his own term.
Nope.
Because I think there's a lot of truth in what Susan said earlier. This was a situation where the mess that had been made was left for the Democrats to clean up.
Carl Albert said so. We have chosen the next president so that we can choose the one after that. It's on the record. Because they also knew that Richard Nixon... Carl Albert said, on record, Nixon won't make it through. If we put him in, then we will have someone that we can control there, and it's a good thing. It's available for anyone that wants to find it.
Well, you know, at 93, and I don't know, you can't say that his life was cut short.
No, and I congratulate him for his longevity. And I more than that, I congratulate with great emphasis his lovely wife sticking with it and putting up with it and raising kids and being honest about addiction and living through it and counseling herself through it such that she created, I've always heard, a very healthy environment for those that wanted to do something different than be addicted. there's the power in the family.
So, you know, whatever people want to believe happens to somebody when they die, I hope the best possible outcome happened for Gerald Ford, although I'm sure there are several hundred thousand, if not million, East Timorese who might have a problem with that. And probably the souls of more than a few Americans.
Well,
but he lived to be 93, but I refuse to engage in this sanctification of him. He was not.
No, the links that you have established, the connections, the dots you have put lines between, will stand the test of factual investigation. Whether he did it out of, no matter what the mix, ignorance or malevolence, I don't know where the percentage lies in that equation, but I'm sorry. If I'm asked to say up or down, you know, great climate or way too hot, I'm sorry, Mr. Ford's going to be heated up for a long, long time.
I think there's every possibility if you buy into that stuff.
Well, you know, I'm one of those Clemens fans like you. You know, if there is, it's going to be one for climate and one for company. So you and I'll have plenty to talk about when we meet them all there.
Ain't that the truth?
And on that note, offer my best to your father.
I sure will.
He is that sterling example of that generation that saved our country's ass.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that, David. Thank you so very kindly.
My best to you and yours. Happy holidays.
Happy New Year. Take care. And on to our good friend Gerard calling from Indiana. Hey, Gerard, thanks for waiting.
Hey, no problem, Bob. I just, your comment earlier about your son now watching a president bumble through a presidency at the same age you did, and look who he's sandwiched in between. Same fellas there.
Yeah.
It got me actually kind of reminiscing about my early years and Susan's comments earlier too. I was 7 when they shot JFK. I was 12 when they shot Bobby and Martin Luther King. I was around 16 when Watergate happened, and just I have a lot of personal connection to this whole Ford thing because I grew up in a suburb of Grand Rapids. And I can remember it that summer of my 16th year, a gaggle of us teenagers sitting around. That was kind of our pastime, was sitting around watching the Watergate hearings and, you know, and working our summer job. But even at that age, we had a good understanding that something was stinking to high heaven in Denmark. And the kind of the personal connection that I have is that one of my best friends, his father happened to be president of the Michigan State Bar Association at the time, and knew Gerald Ford. And my friend's older brother eventually at that time was fresh out of Harvard Law School, and it for a short period of time was actually a speechwriter for Gerald Ford.
Oh my.
And there was a reception at the Grand Rapids Airport one time when he came home, and I got to shake the man's hand. But you know, after sitting there watching these Watergate hearings, and then with the subsequent pardon, to me, as a young person then, I was jaw-dropping shocked that happened. after sitting there day after day watching those hearings and seeing what Nixon was up to and his cronies, it was beyond belief to me that Ford would pardon him. And
well, you know, that's a very good point.
It's cheapened the presidency. I mean, we talked about it earlier. At that point, we came to the after all that had happened. You know, the mark of a real statesman would have been: yes, there was a wound from Vietnam. Yes, there was a wound from Watergate, and a deep one. But a laceration like that, any military medic will tell you, when you're in those kind of dire straits, you cauterize the wound. And that means pain. And any statesman worth his salt would have been willing to go through that to preserve the idea that no one in this country, even the president, is not above the law.
And see, that's the problem, Gerard. They don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
They actively believe that the president is above the law. But they don't dare let that be challenged in court, because no court, and I would hazard a guess to say that an absolute insane wingnut SOB like Tony Scalia would be hard pressed to say that any American is actually above the law. And the point that you raised for me in talking about the pardon and the shock of the pardon, part of that is the fact that it was done preemptively.
Oh yeah.
You know, a presidential pardon's not like a loaf of Wonder Bread. It doesn't have a shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely true that Nixon could have been indicted, and he could have been tried. He could have been convicted or acquitted. If he had been convicted, then our friend Jim earlier is correct, and that would have caused spasms and social socio-political convulsions in this nation, then whoever occupied the Oval Office could certainly have issued a pardon at that time, and it would have been every bit as effective as the preemptive pardon was. But the American people, by virtue of what Gerald Ford did, the American people were cheated out of even that. We deserved to know exactly what he did in the way of his criminal conduct.
Absolutely.
And we were deprived of that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I read an article. I wish I could remember the author, but I can't. There was an article in the Nation magazine some months ago, really centering around particularly Cheney and how his, you know, the seeds of what we're experiencing now were planted and sprouted then, as you mentioned earlier about, you know, the consolidating the power of the presidency. And, you know, I think it, you can't help but if you take an honest look at the history and how things have fallen out, I can't see how you cannot come to that conclusion.
Well, I don't either. It seems to me that we had an excellent chance for an object lesson in improving ourselves serious about the idea of being a nation of laws and not of men or persons.
Mm-hmm.
And Gerald Ford snatched that away from the people of the United States of America. Justice, it was a slap in the face of the very ideals upon which this nation is founded, and that is that there is equal justice under law, that it is possible to go into a court and have justice meted out by 12 persons tried and true. 12 people sitting on a jury could have heard that case. However many, what is it, 30, 16, I don't remember. However many people sit on a grand jury should have been allowed to hear that case. And the neat thing about juries is, although it is technically illegal, they exercise something from time to time called jury nullification.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where a jury will refuse to convict, because even though they're told that they are only to try the facts and not the law, they decide that the whole darn thing is a wreck and shouldn't go forward. And they basically nullify the entire process. That opportunity was taken from the American people. We lost a lot with Gerald Ford, and I don't know if there are many people out there who are actually contemplating what it was we lost. But we lost, you know, ultimately we lost the ability to, my God, it makes me want to scream when I think about those hostages in Tehran who were ready to be released. The negotiations were ongoing, and the Reagan people stepped in and said, just hold them a little bit longer. They, again, party over nation. They were willing to hang those hostages out to dry in order to get political power in this nation. They traded arms. Dangerous arms. We're not talking about 22s and flit guns. They traded those to the Iranians as a way of getting, and it's not just a matter of getting the hostages released, you know, to Reagan. It was a matter of getting the hostages held back from Carter. How much more criminal can conduct like that be? And you get that because the American people were cheated of their day in court by Gerald Ford.
Well, and you wonder because, and, you know, this is not something I would want to lay at Gerald Ford's feet, because I also believe that people are responsible for their own actions. But, you know, when you see, just looking at that simple scenario of him being pardoned that way, and maybe it's just because we're more aware of it now than then, I don't know. And then you look at something like the whole Enron situation in Ken Lay. You know, where you basically, and it's happened over and over and over again, where somebody in a prestigious position, you know, it's like if you have so many documents on your wall, so many accolades from the Chamber of Commerce, you know, so many tokens of, I don't want to say esteem, but, you know,
well, no, it's the end.
If you have the appearance of being a well put together person.
Well, it's from the end of The Wizard of Oz, where the wizard looks at, who is it? The lion. He says,
yeah, no,
well, what
the behind the curtain? Yeah.
No. It's the Tin Man. He says, what they have is a testimonial.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, you're exactly right. If you've got enough testimonials,
yeah, then you're allowed to do anything you please. It doesn't matter who you screw or who, you know, who dies in the name of your crackpot ideas.
There are still people in the United States, and I would imagine they are probably measured in their thousands, Gerard, who think that Henry Kissinger is a great man and a wise man.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, and you know I'm right. You know, the guy is the guy is a butcher. He's a mass murderer. Again, East Timor, that happened on Gerald Ford's watch.
And what was the title of the book that Kissinger came out with a year or so ago? Why, I think it was something like, Does America Need a Foreign Policy? That was the title of the book.
Oh, God.
You know?
Not any that you come up with, you old killer.
You know? And, I don't know, that's just, you know, like I said, you know, I just wanted to relate that personal connection and how that, you know, and this is something, you know, that we have to think about, and you know, like Malloy says, the fight is not over.
No, and as long as there's even a shred of the American Republic left, there's an American Republic left worth fighting for and worth saving. And that's what this is all about. That's what's so disturbing, I guess, Gerard, in the Sturm und Drang of the Ford death orgy, is that we're overlooking so much in an effort to be civil and polite. And sometimes politeness has to go by the boards to be at least historically honest.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of honesty that is being passed over in Gerald Ford. And I get, you know,
it really turns my stomach by comparison of what they do to Jimmy Carter.
Right.
You know, it just, and if anybody, you know, and it's often said Jimmy Carter is more presidential out of office than he was in, but, you know, if anybody deserves those kind of accolades, in my book anyway, it would be Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, but he will be more shabbily treated by the mainstream media than any president who has passed on in recent memory. Because I don't fully understand the reason why. Because of his essential decency itself, perhaps. Because the media has done such a lovely job of painting him up as America's worst president. And it is simply a lie. I mean, he inherited problems from Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon that were hellish. And frankly, he passed them on to Ronald Reagan to a certain extent, although it was changing. It was getting better. It was transitional. But of course, you know, he gets, you know, oh God, he gets pilloried every time the Bortzes and the O'Reillys and the Hannitys and the Limbaughs open their filthy mouths. And all he was a decent man trying to do a decent job in a decent office. But you won't, you know, that'll all be gone by the boards, and it'll, like I said, Bart Kopp said, how many times will they mention rabbit in the first minute that, that it's been announced that Carter is gone?
Or how many times will they show the gas line?
Yeah.
From the oil embargo.
Sure.
Well, that's about all I had to say about it.
All right, well, thanks, Gerard.
Good to hear you on the air after the holiday break, and I hope things go well with your dad.
I appreciate it. You take care.
Alrighty.
Bye now. I guess at least, well, I suppose there are some that think I have been overly cruel to Gerald Ford. But that has not been my aim. My aim has been to recall some of the facts that have been left by the boards in the absence of anything approaching journalistic integrity. You know, I suppose I should take heart in the fact that he said that he didn't approve of the Iraq War, or that it was not justified. The direct quote is, "I don't think I would have gone to war." And he said he very strongly disagreed with the justifications for invading Iraq. And that he would have pushed alternatives like sanctions and been more vigorous about it. And he said, this is a quote, "Rumsfeld and Cheney and the president made a big mistake in justifying going to war in Iraq. They put the emphasis on weapons of mass destruction, and now, I've never publicly said I thought they made a mistake, but I felt very strongly it was an error in how they should justify what they were going to do." Oh my God, he wasn't saying he disagreed with the war. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, he's saying they used the wrong lie. Listen to that. "I've never publicly said I thought they made a mistake, but I felt very strongly it was an error in how they should justify what they were going to do." Ouch. Just ouch. So in essence, what Gerald Ford is saying there, I don't think that qualifies as anything exculpatory. He says they used the wrong lie. That it wasn't weapons of mass destruction, that, oh, what should we have used? "I can understand the theory of wanting to free people," Ford said, referring to Bush's assertion that the United States has a duty to free people. And he said he was skeptical, quote, whether you can detach that from the obligation, number one, of what's in our national interest. And I just don't think we should go hellfire damnation around the globe freeing people unless it is directly related to our own national security. Ah, it just gets worse, doesn't it? It just gets worse. I don't think we should go hellfire damnation around the globe freeing people unless it's directly related to our own national security. See, he missed the point, too. George W. Bush doesn't give a tinker's damn about freeing anybody. It was psychology. It was weird stuff. It was things that involved laying on couches and talking about mommy, and more particularly, daddy, that led to the Iraq War. I can understand the theory of wanting to free people. How free are the Iraqi people? How free are they going to be a year from now? 2 years from now? I guess freedom is in the eyes of the person enjoying it. If you live in a culture where some band of religious zealots says that every woman in the country has to wear a beekeeper's suit in order to go to the market, and you agree with that, I guess you're free. Not so sure about how the lady in the beekeeper suit feels about it. I felt very strongly it was an error in how they should justify what they were going to do. He didn't think it was a mistake to go into Iraq. He thought they justified it wrong. Holy crap. And this is being, you know, this is being played out all over the media as Ford from the grave says he disagreed with decision to go into Iraq. Bug spray! He disagreed with the reason they gave for going into Iraq, and there is a boatload of difference in those two things. God Almighty. I think Cheney has become much more pugnacious as vice president, he said. I don't think if I'd been president on the basis of the facts as I saw them publicly, I don't think I would have ordered the Iraq War. I would have maximized our effort through sanctions, through restrictions, whatever, to find another answer. I don't think. But at the end of the day, it's the justification that bothers him. Justifications. Justifications. I guess they frame up a big chunk of our lives. We justify, we rationalize. So he doesn't think he would have ordered the Iraq War. Not sure. But if he had, he wouldn't have used the justifications that they used. He wouldn't have used weapons of mass destruction. And apparently he wouldn't have used liberating people. I guess that means he would have led off with he's an evil dictator who gassed his own people. We just don't know, do we, though? Because he did not have the personal integrity and the moral courage to say it at a time when it literally might have saved thousands upon thousands of lives, both American and Iraqi. And how sad that is. I suppose if one were tallying sins, that would not be considered a sin of commission, but of omission. Not the things done, but the things undone. And oh, the things that were left undone because a man named Gerald R. Ford was president of the United States of America. And will we ever know? I suppose we are condemned to speculation. But whatever the outcome of a trial of Richard Nixon, I suspect that the end result would have been that we knew that our Constitution worked and that our criminal justice system was fully functional and healthy. Instead, now we have a prison system in which a number of the prisons themselves are run by private entities. And those private prisons have Mexicans and Central Americans in them, including their children. We talked about this last Friday. And because of Gerald Ford, we live in an America where you can't be sure that when you call Aunt Matilda that some little freak at the NSA isn't listening on it, because George W. Bush has said, hey, if you're calling Al-Qaeda, we want to know why. And the NSA is so confused that it doesn't know the difference between Aunt Matilda and Al-Qaeda. Because at a time when the criminal conduct of a president could have been checked, it was not. And that is the price, not that Gerald Ford pays in death, but that we all of us who love this republic, who love our Constitution, pay in life. Thank you, each and every one of you, for joining us this evening, Agnes and me. We do appreciate it, and we love sharing our time with you. We hope you find it equally gratifying. Agnes produced the show tonight. She listened to your phone calls, checked your emails, ran the breaks, and had dinner all at the same time. She's wonderful. Brian Reznor announces the program. John Fox in Sydney, Australia, the recuperating John Fox, we hope back up to, more fully up to steam, is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, maintains all the IT stuff here and does it expertly, at a distance, no less, with me as the executor of his computer will. He says it and I do it, in other words. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and all the podcasting of all the programs on the Horn. And he does it without sending you a bill. You just have to do the right thing and maybe kick the cost of a night out once in a while Ben's way, for what he does as the hardest working man in liberal talk. We have wonderful moderators at headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. If you've never been there, you should. You'll enjoy it. Jump right in. We've cleaned out all the right wing nuts at headonradio.com, the message boards. You're welcome aboard there, equally free, and a little bit more permanent than, say, what goes on in a chat room. Enjoy yourself. Avail yourself of the things that we provide for your participation. Of course, every program on the horn comes your way by virtue of the fact that several thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters get up every day and they go and they build the American dream, and in doing so, they support this network and they're helping to save the American dream. And we do appreciate it. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Operations at all six plants of the Swift Company were temporarily suspended during those raids. 800,000 current and former students, faculty, and staff of the University of California, Los Angeles have been notified that a campus computer was hacked. Their names and some personal information may have been exposed. Incoming House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said she would introduce legislation to increase the oversight of the Congressional Page Program. She called the young people who participate in it a national treasure. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, A Conversation with America, designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Health investigators are still looking into the cause of an E. coli outbreak among Taco Bell customers in the Northeast and Taco John customers in Iowa. The CDC says no food source has yet been confirmed as the cause. The super jumbo jet, the Airbus A380, has been declared safe to begin commercial flights. The massive double-decker plane, which has 555 seats, faced numerous delivery delays and was under development for 6 years. Federal Reserve policy members held their last meeting of the year and decided to